Eliezer.
I guess if you get the meter, what if you're over the Knesset?
Today's daf is daf Dalit. 12 days in Sfirat HaOmer. And what was yesterday a tangential reference is today important to our sugya, central to our sugya. Remember that yesterday we were just analyzing something that was fundamental to the Mishnah, which is what is the status of a hand? Do we view a hand as being a reshut b'fnei atzma, or is it a no place and it doesn't matter? The nafka mina was, according to Abaye, whether somebody who put his hand out would be allowed to take it back in if it had something in it. Would that be considered that the thing in it is an amakum p'tur, or the thing is in it is an ekarmelet type of thing, in which case it wouldn't be allowed to bring it back in? Now, tangentially, at that point, we asked, in order to answer, we had two braitot, which we originally thought expressed the two approaches in Abaye. So we tried to explain that those two braitot actually weren't arguing about Abaye at all, and they were talking about two completely different situations. One of them was when it was Mibaod Yom, and one of them was when it was Mishachashecha, and the question is, when did they Asr it? Did they Asr it when he did an Isser, Mishachashecha, but not Mibaod Yom? But that was all very fine. We ended up without an answer to Abaye because of it, or at least it looks like that. We'll see in a moment if that sounds so simple. But because of that, we immediately said, well, wait a moment now. Why don't we entertain the opposite notion? That if he did it miba'od yom, then at least if we make this gezeirah, he's not liable to come to an Isra Chilul Shabbat, because even if he would drop what he's holding into the area that he extended his hand, it wouldn't really be a problem because he never did an Akira on Shabbat. Mashenkin, if he did it Mishachashecha, where he would be likely to come in Deshulul Shabbat, because he's probably going to drop it, then we wouldn't have made our Gezeirah. Since we avoided making that distinction between the two braitot, must be that it's an invalid distinction. Nobody considered that to be a valid distinction. Which itself now answers a question that was asked by Rabbi, and he wanted to know whether we would be matir someone to do an Isser in order to avoid coming a day Chilul Shabbat, where it was an Isser Drabona. Case being, someone had put a piece of bread into an oven. If he can take it down before it bakes, which is only an Isser Drabona, then he won't be Mechalal Shabbat. If he leaves it there, he will be Mechalal Shabbat. Since it apparently is no concern of ours to have this guy holding his hand there and perhaps dropping something, apparently we don't care. Our gezerot stand whether they're liable to cause Chilul Shabbat in a particular case or not. That's the diuk we wanted to make yesterday. So then, today we want to explore, actually, the Rabbi Bar Abaye's question in detail. But where it stands today, according to what we did yesterday, we did some fancy and loose footwork, but actually we weren't paying close attention to what was happening in the background. What we ended up doing was providing alternative explanations for the machloket between the two braitot, about whether you could bring your hand in. As if the first explanation, Mishachashecha or not, that was the one that was going to answer Rabbi Bar Abaye's question, but if we can get out of that, then we don't have a problem. So we said, maybe when he's talking about the window is Lamala Miyasara, when it's Lamata Miyasara. Well, we started talking about whether it was B'Shogeg, whether it was B'Mezid, and Katsina Shogeg got to Mezid. And the question, that the last approach we took between the two braitot was maybe one was talking about bringing it back and Lav Zero was okay, but to put it somewhere else was not okay. So they weren't arguing. As if that explains away the problem of Bibi Barabaya, correct? But as Tosis points out, it doesn't explain anything away. We're not going to erase the fact that in the Beit HaMidrash, we offered that first possibility, is the explanation of two braitot, and nobody thought that it was odd that instead of saying maybe we'll only be kones miba'od yom, Mishachashecha, we should have said maybe we should only be kones miba'od yom. How does it change anything? Rashi insists, the Feirush, that once we make this twist and we give another explanation to the two brayot, it no longer has anything to do with Rabbi Barabai. How does he explain the fact that it has nothing to do with Rabbi Barabai? Because Rashi says, look, all along, basically, we were questioning whether a knas would exist that would turn a hand into a mokum that isn't a mokum Torah, let's say a karmelit. Right? But actually, says Rashi, the truth is, you know what, as a matter of fact, such a beautiful Rashi. Let's read it, a couple of lines long. B'shogeg lo kantsua rabbon. So we want to change our mind now and talk about the difference between B'shogeg and the Mezid as the distinction between the two brayot. One which says it's mutter to bring his hand back in, and one which says it's also to bring his hand back in. So we're right at the bottom of the page, nine lines up. The Rebibi lo tivshot mi'ochal ol yisir v'leter, says Rashi. Forget about Rebibi. Rebibi is not an issue. Even though in offering an alternative explanation in the Braita, you don't seem to address the question of Rebibi at all. Why is it no longer an issue? Because the reason the lo kantsur b'shogeg has nothing to do with Rabibi's issues. It's not because we're afraid he's going to drop it. He didn't do anything. There was never anything b'mezid that he did. So you'll say, so? So what? I mean, who's to say that Rabibi Barabaya is dafka talking about that case? He was talking about the day of Chatas anyway. No. There's no connection, says Rashi. Because you see, the case, this is the very central distinction, the case of Rabibi Barabaya refers to an extant Isur, which is called Ridiyat Hapat. Now the question is, does that extant Isur apply even in circumstances where it will lead to Chilul Shabbat, correct? But the question that we raised, there is no such extant Isur. What we're discussing over is whether to create such an Isur under the circumstances. A man stuck his hand out of the window, bebezid, on Shabbat. Shall we tell him he can't bring it back? We never before created a concept that a hand is a different rishut. You're questioning now whether, because he did an iser, shall we decodes him as if it's a different rishut. What does that have to do with the Rabbi Barbaya's question? If you're going to say we do not create such a knas, well, obviously we don't create a knas in the first place to bring him to Chilul Shabbat. What does that have to do with Rabibi Barabai's question about whether in a case of a standing Isur that applies in an infinite number of cases, if one of those cases is a case where we'll lead to Chilul Shabbat, whether it would apply in that case as well? It's a separate question. Therefore, this has nothing to do with Rabibi, correct? Let's see that inside. Because it's the chazarat yado in afilu shvut. There's no extant iser called yado ki karmeli dami. You want to create such an idea. Well, ilav mishum knasa. There's no such idea, correct? Now you're asking me, do we make a knas? The answer is no. Bakalokonis. Why should we make a knas to create such an absurd situation that because of our knas, you'll be bali dechilul Shabbat? Mashenkin Ridiyat Hapat, which was the question of Rabibi Barabai, is an existing Isur Shvut. It was Nigzara B'minyan. It's not a knas. It's a way of looking at Chochmah and its relationship to Malakha. Skill. Fine. Therefore, Mishum Kodem Shevelo Lidei Isur Lidei Chiyuv Chatat Lo Batlu Zeratam. Who's to say that under such circumstances we should be mavatal the gzera? Maybe not. Okay. And how about the bright that it says it's asur? You also can't bring a raya from. Because over here, mitakansu b'mezid, what does that prove? Da'atam leka l'mechash dilma l'shdino shivchayim mitat beitin. Why should we be afraid that the guy will drop it? Let him not drop it, but he wants to come to the yiv. Mashenkein, in the case of knas, he already did it. It's inevitable. If you put the bread in the oven, the bread is going to bake. Now that's not a question of, gee, maybe he'll come with a Kiyavkatas. It's over unless you do something about it. So over there, of course, it may very well be that we won't be Konis. Therefore, no matter how you learn it, you cannot apply it to Rabbi Barabai's case. Tosfos says, very nice logic, except it's totally irrelevant. The deed that we were making that Rabbi Barabai should be answered was from the fact that we did not entertain initially an inverted approach to say that the Kandaz would make more sense if it was Niba Odion, where you wouldn't go Billy Dechiyu, than it would be if it was Mishach HaShecha. Did that happen or not? You're not changing history. In the Beit HaMidrash, that was taken for granted, and that was your deal. What was taken for, well, it was still taken for granted. Even if you change the possible explanations, the event happened as it was described here. In the Beit HaMidrash, they considered the fact that the two brightot may well reflect the two tzadim of Abayin, in which direction? That we're more likely to Aser Mishach HaShecha, despite the fact that it's more likely to be Bali Deki of Chatas. So, how does the Gemara now deal with the question of Rabbi Barabai? It still stands, does it not? We prove now that Rabbi Barabai's answer is to be answered in the negative. No, Loitiru. We're not concerned about coming ultimately to Deki of Chatas. That's Tosfos' cash. So Tosfos explains that, look, all along, the Gemara is aware of the fact that it's a little bit silly, if we're going to look at it as a knas, to say, let's be kones, Mishach HaShecha. What are you saying? You should have said it the other way around. Let's be kones Miba Odiyom. Let's be kones Miba Odiyom and not Mishach HaShecha? What's the sense of that? I mean, I understand the reason. The reason is because we don't want to come to Dechi of Chatas. Can you make a Knas, which is an absurdity in the first place, to say that where the guy didn't do anything wrong, there we'll give you a Knas. But where he did something wrong, there we won't give you a Knas. I mean, it's crazy. It's just not reasonable. So all along, we took into consideration the understanding that that's not a normal way to say such a thing. We should never make such an assumption. All the Gemara was trying to do, according to Tosfos, is to say, look, I don't know how you want to look at it. You could do it one way, like this, but then you'll answer Rabbi Barabai, and you won't answer Abai. You could do it the other way, then you'll answer Abai, you won't answer Rabbi Barabai. And it wasn't really giving us a definitive explanation. It was just saying, you know, I mean, deep down, you know that that's a little bit silly. So let's move on and give another explanation. Okay? This is how to understand the words. The other explanations were all taking into consideration that initially we were left with a very unhappy kind of understanding of those two brises. It was all tentative. The Gemara wasn't saying, so therefore let us answer Rabbi Barabai. It was saying, look, you can do it this way with one assumption. You can do it the other way with the other assumption, leaving Abai open. It's neither of them are very good options, because, I mean, we're certainly not going to make a takana in that direction, where it turns out to be in Tosfos' Loshon HaChuka V'Tlula. And it becomes a big joke to make a knas on a guy who didn't do anything wrong, but don't give him a knas when he did do something wrong. I mean, that's very similar to Israeli law. I mean, we don't do that kind of thing. So Memela, we leave it with an alternative explanation, which is better, which we were always open to. Okay, so Lamaisa Tosfos agrees that we are really, of course, the Gemara is saying, you're right, we can't prove anything. He just doesn't think that Rashi's logic is sufficient. Okay, I was just pointing out that no one in his right mind would really have been willing to give the difference in the brightot as during the day we will be cognizant, but at night we won't be cognizant. It's just too silly. And that's why you can't prove anything from it, okay? But we're left with the standing question of Bibi Barabai, according to this, right? Today we want to go into that standing question. So it says the Gemara today, on the sixth line down, Gufa. Bori Bibi Barabai, let's look at his question for a minute. Because when we think about it, it doesn't seem to add up. Hidbik pat b'tanur. The question is, Hitiru lo lirdota Kodim sheyavo lidei chiyuv chatat o lo hitiru. Does he have the right to be mevatel the takana drabona of shvut, which is called ridiyat hapat, or not? Omalei Rav Acha bar Abaye l'Ravina, what I don't understand is, what is the case? Echidami. Are we talking about that what? The guy had done it originally, the shogeg, and he never remembered that it was Shabbos. So what do you mean, hitiru? Hitiru to whom? He doesn't know it's Shabbos. So that can't be the case. It must be that he did remember. Oy vey, it's Shabbos. I better take it down, right? Yeah, but the thing is, if you remembered it was Shabbos, then you won't be chayav chiyav chatas. Because you're only chayav chiyav chatas if the shogeg extends from the beginning of the malacha to the end of the malacha. Over here, by definition, if he remembers it Shabbos, it's no longer a shogeg. So if he doesn't take it down, he's not going to be chayav chatas anyway. And your question was, will we allow him to take it down in order that he won't be chayav chiyav chatas? He won't be chayav chiyav chatas, no matter what. Even if you don't allow him to take it down.
Does he turn to a bezin? He's chayav
chatas. No, but he's not a shogeg. It has to be, but he's not a shogeg anymore. So you don't have a shogeg below yitkar. If he didn't remember at the end, so then laman hitiru. Who are we talking about? Hitiru. And if we're talking about Elalavdi Hadavitka, then what? He turns around now and suddenly remembers? So then if he doesn't take it down, me mechayev. But zan kol chayavecha ta'otei nam chayavim ad shtei tchilatan shkaga besofan shkaga. In order to be chayev, you have to be a shogeg from beginning to end. Ella what? Is it talking about that he was amazed from beginning to end? So then why does it say l'day iser, l'day chiyav chavetz? It should say kodim shiavo l'day iser skila mibari. Then the question is whether we're matrim to take it down before he's chayav skila? Omrav Shila, well, it's talking about the shogeg. I mean, it does say lidechi of chatat, and when it says hitiru, it must mean to somebody else. So, as you see somebody who puts up a pot, an esh tanur, against the edge of an oven, not realizing it's Shabbat, the man walks away. He is going to be chayav chatas in exactly 30 seconds. You say, oh my gosh, this is a disaster. Can I go and take down this piece of bread so that the guy won't be chayav chatas? That's the question. Matkiflor of Sheshet, I don't understand. What kind of question is that? Why should we say to a guy, you do a chet in order to save another guy from a chatas? I mean, what are you going to do? You'll save him a couple $100. So therefore you should be chotei. It's his problem. It's not your problem. So what would Rabbi Bar Abaye be asking anyway? Say?
Could say, let him do the...
No, why shouldn't
we? Save them from the situation.
But why would we? I mean, obviously that's what Rav Shila held. But we're tying on Rav Shila. I mean, the question where it's not your responsibility for you to do an iser doesn't make sense. Now Tosfos
brings, doesn't go this far.
To do an iser? Apparently not. Well, let's see. Tosfos brings many examples where, in fact, we do have people do iser. We just had one in Brochas. Somebody was mishachrer his eved in order to have a minyan. You're Katayna, but I also need the minion. The problem is that the Gemara answered over there that because of, we said, well, it's just as big a disser, this is the Gemara answered over there that it's a mitzvah the rabbin. But if it's a mitzvah the rabbin, then it's for others. So then why am I doing it for others? Then it's a non-issue. Or we have the case where we bring by the Karban Pesach. In order for people to fit in, if they weren't able to bring the Karban Pesach before, we'll allow them to bring the Karban Pesach late in the day, despite the fact that you bring over on the assay of completing all of your Karbanos on the Olat Hashachar. It's the Kohen that's going to do the Chet, and we're doing it in order that a guy shouldn't be over on his... I mean, if you want to answer on the east, you could say maybe it's a mitzvah of a rabbin, maybe mitzvah rabbin is indeed considered to be a general arvus issue. Does this, what about the case where a guy had a shivcha who was going around offering her services to people, and they forced him to be mishak with the shivcha, so that he was a chatzioner to be mat to her, to marry her off. Why is that? He said, well, maybe you could say that case was also the rabbin, because, I mean, prostitution is like a rabbin. He's b'chadish, very non-acceptable idea today, but all these poor men are basically anusim. This woman offering herself like that, I mean, what are they supposed to do? Like the case we had before, Maya Selotoa Ben Velo Yechta. But in any event, maybe those are all unique circumstances. But Enoch and Ami, two people of the same level, why would we say that one should be chote in order for the other one to be zocher? Each one has the same chiyuv to take care of himself. Tosfos does ask a very beautiful question from the case of a chover who takes off meiser in the wrong way in order to make sure that an amaretz won't be nichshal in eating something that wasn't meiser. Isn't that a case of your being chote kedeshis kechavercha? And Tosfos explains, yeah, but that's because it comes from you. You're responsible because you're the guy that sold it to the amaretz. So even though maybe it's not the best way to take off the meiser, but you can't be responsible for somebody's not doing it right. But over here, where they have no connection with each other, why would we be matir one's iser for the other one's hatzol? Okay. So, that can't be the case, says the Gemara. Therefore, says Ravashi, El Omer Ravashi, Leolam b'mezid, actually, it's got to be talking about that he put that bread in that tanur on purpose, and instead of saying the words kodem shiavoli day isur chatat, chiyuv chatat, say kodem shiavoli day isur skila. That's the way to say it. Ve'ema kodem shiavoli day isur skila. Change the wording of Rabbi Barabai's question. And indeed, Ravacha breda rava matne la bahadei, Rav Acha Breda Rava originally had it that way, and according to the gears that we have, didn't even have it as a question. He had it as a statement. Omer Abibi Bar Abaye, Hidbik Pat B'Tanur, indeed he tiru lo lirdota, kodem shiavoli de yisur skila. Now, Tosfos says, this is stupid. Well, how can anybody ask such a question? Who's going to listen to you? A guy decides he doesn't want to be chayev skila. He realizes, oh my gosh, I'm in big trouble. So we tell him, yeah, but too bad, you'll have to die because the rabbanit said it's an issur to take the pot down off of the wall. Well, what's he going to do? He'll say, drop dead. He'll go over and he'll take it down. I mean, what, are we crazy? I said, the whole thing is a joke. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous.
But he's not there
anymore. What?
But he's not there anymore.
He's the one we're talking to. We're not being matched to somebody else. The whole thing is absolutely crazy. What are we talking? We're seriously entertaining the notion that we should shoot someone because he shouldn't be over on his rabbanon of taking the pot down from the tanur. I mean, what is this? What's seriously going on? So Tosfos points out that obviously the guy is not going to be chayav skila, because even if he doesn't take it down because of the fact that we're not letting him take it down, he's not going to be chayav skila. Brother, we're creating a circumstance in which there's no desire to be mechal of Shabbos. It's certainly not amazing. He's being mechal, how could we possibly be mechal of skila? That's not the point. The point over here is the level of the iser. That since we're talking about an act that culminates in iser skila, so therefore, maybe we should be matern, even though of course he's not going to be chayav skila.
But what if he doesn't take it down? It'll burn when we finish.
Yeah.
It'll get ruined, so.
This, our president has asked, for those of you in cyberspace, why not just leave it there to get burned to a crisp? Now, this is actually Zeno's paradox, because bread can never get burned to a crisp, since it's always becoming infinitely closer to getting completed.
Christmas bread and then rebirth.
It turns out that usually it first becomes bread before burning. So even though we're not able to mathematically explain how that happens, being that there's a series of an infinity of incremental steps, it does happen that way. We attempted to have a little race to see whether the turtle gets to the other side of the tunnel before the bread bakes, or whether it ends up being stuck somewhere in the middle. But it's a very good point that our president raises. Why?
Turtle.
But at least it's very strong.
Why?
It's a period of time where
yeah, that's right. But why the important point that is raised here is that either if Lemaisa, and this is really what our president is presenting, if Lemaisa we take into consideration the final product, which is what you're saying, so then if it's burned, we don't have a final product. If we're not taking into consideration the final product, in other words, if what we're saying is the fact that you put bread into the tanur is an isser, so then what's the difference whether you'll take it down or not? Were you over the isser or you weren't over the isser? If the isser consists of putting in bread to break.
That's your
maisa. That's my maisa. There's nothing, it's like saying, I take a baby and I throw the baby over the side of the building. And now I say, well, I didn't do anything wrong because the baby's still alive. So you can't be machayev of me. No, sorry, still alive. It's 88 floors. Whoops, what? Oh, dear me, that's not my fault. I mean, so no, it's the throwing the baby over the side of the building that's machayev, you know? The Gemara actually has such a question. It questions whether what happens if you run down faster the baby gets there and you put a sword in the way. Remember, we had that time. A little bit difficult to get there faster. There are ways of arranging it. Yeah, it's always, I mean, this is classic in the movies. Any Ben and Jerry's, not Tom and Jerry's. Yeah. All right, but this is a serious question. Another way of asking the question is the way Tosfos asks the question here, which is, if you're taking into consideration the possibility of Ridiyat HaPat, then you can never give a guy Hatra'ah. Because what are you going to do? You're going to say to him, don't stick that bread on the side of an oven, you'll be chayev achatas. I mean, you'll be chayev skila. What do you mean? What makes you think I'll be chayev skila? Obviously, I'll take it down before it bakes. So there's no, every hatra'ah will be hatra'at safek. And then if he doesn't take it down before it bakes, we say, well, he obviously forgot the warning, because hatra'ah needs to be immediate at the time he does the yisr. These are serious considerations. What is the yisr? Is the yisr the act? Is this just a condition to the act that it needs to have at some point finished? That's a very interesting way of looking at it. And in fact, Tosfos compares it to cases of conditions. For instance, suppose somebody says that if I go to sleep today, then I swear off food. Or tomorrow. If I go to sleep tomorrow, I swear off food. Right? He eats. Now, he's not allowed to sleep, but that's a condition. So he's not over the isser when he goes to sleep, and at the time that he ate, it was an isser. Okay, so it's possible to create an isser that is based on a condition, but that seems to be what's happening over here. It's also to be manbik pat betanur, conditional on its ultimate completion as pat. In which case, it doesn't matter that it burns afterwards. I kept the condition. So it's not that I need the finished pot in order to have done the Chilul Shabbat. You see, all of these were basically the questions that he was raising. In all seriousness, I mean, it wasn't well defined, but that was really important.
If he takes out the pot,
yeah.
Does he mosif? Is it an avirah? A different avera or part of the same?
If he takes avera down the pot, there's no problem. The only question was, he did an issur d'rabbanan into taking it down. So that was the question that Abibi Barabai raised. Can you do that issur d'rabbanan in order to avoid the reality of a chilul Shabbat, despite the fact that you yourself are not going to be chayav in it, obviously? But you did it. You don't want the completion of a ma'aseh of Chilul Shabbat, even a conditional ma'aseh of Chilul Shabbat.
So he throws a piece of paper into the fire.
Correct. All of these questions are going to be addressed most powerfully in the question of Hotzah. Because Hotzah is the one thing where the actual malacha is defined by its end. Because I need to achieve an Akira. So in questions of Zerika, we have exactly this question, which we're going to soon deal with. I throw a ball, and somebody comes out of left field and catches the ball before it gets to the guy that I'm throwing it to, in Rishus Sarab. So it was Munah, but that Hanukkah was not done as a result of my original. Or a dog comes along and catches it. Or it falls into the fire and burns up before it can be Munah. All of these cases are cases that we'll ask later on. We need to define better the relationship of the act to the results of the act. Because when it comes to Shabbat, obviously that's central to understanding the nature of Malach. So it's very nice to raise the issue right here in the beginning of the Masechet. Says the Gemara, the next case was Pashata Ani et Yado. Okay, we've now decided that his hand is considered to be a neither Rishut HaRabim nor Rishut HaYachid. Okay. On the other hand, you also have taken for granted that when the hand is in the same Rishut as the body, that if I put something into that hand, Balabayat is standing still, the Oni puts something into that hand, that then it is considered to be Munah. Right? Is that so simple? What defines Hanacha? Does Hanacha mean simply at rest within a space? Or does Hanacha mean significantly at rest within a space? The difference is, if it has to be, let's say, at rest, so then if it landed on top of a pole, and it's doing this classic little turn around and around and around, you know, is that at rest? It's not moving anymore, but it's not very safely perched. Maybe that's not called munach. The truth is that munach is defined, it's not clear how we know this, Tosfos deals with it at some length in a number of places. The hanacha is defined, lahalacha, as being in a place which is a minimum of 4 tvachim by 4 tvachim. We'll find that that idea, 4 tvachim by 4 tvachim, is central to all of the spatial conceptions of Masechet Shabbat. That is considered to be makom, a significant space. Less than 4 by 4 tvachim is not a significant space. So the question is, if something is in your hand, then it's not in a significant space in terms of hanacha. It may be in the context of overall space, which is a Rishus HaRab, Rishus HaYachid, but it's not munach in that space. So again, we have two issues. We have the issue of the presence of the object, and we have the issue of the hanachic presence of the object. Okay? So asks the Gemara, Amai chayava binan akira v'anacha me'al gabi makom arba'al arba'a v'leka. We require a place of 4 by 4 tvachim, both for akira and anocha, and our Mishnah seems to imply that we don't. Both for akira and anocha. It says if the Oni puts it into the hand of the Ba'al Abayit, that he would be chayav, even though the hand of the Ba'al Abayit is not 4 by 4. It furthermore says if he picks it up out of the hand of the Ba'al Abayit, he will be chayav, which is akira. So that means you don't need, what?
Sort of like the Gemara saying,
Me'al
and
Le'al,
from a place of 4 by 4,
yeah,
presumably.
Yes. Okay. This is an issue that comes up very often in grammar, in terms of what preposition do you use when you have a list of various verbs. Which one is to, of, for, and so on and so forth. The word using may, instead of going through the list, al, ve'akira, me'al, so on. This happens all the time. It's a rough situation in writing. I come across it all the time. Omar Rabba, I'll tell you, said Rabba, we'll have to say that this is going according to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva doesn't hold of the requirement of having a space of 4x4. As a matter of fact, Rabbi Akiva doesn't seem to hold of requiring the concept of at rest at all in order to be munach. How do I know that? Because the case is the Tznan has zorek mirushuta yachid, rushuta yachid, rushuta rabim be'emza. Let us say that I'm standing in one yard, my friend is standing in a yard across the street, and I want to play ball. So I take the ball, throw it across the street into the other guy's yard. It lands in a reshuta yachid. So it's from reshuta yachid to another reshuta yachid. I didn't do a hotza'ah by any definition. Nonetheless, says Rabbi Akiva, you're chayev. Why would you be chayev? Obviously, he considers the transit of the ball across reshuta rabim to be the equivalent of a landing in reshuta rabim. So therefore, even though it was never munach, it was kalut. Kalut is a very interesting word that doesn't have a clear-cut English equivalent, and therefore it serves in Hebrew for a very large range of ideas that in terms of physics make a great deal of sense. We use kalut in the sense of receiver, maklet radio, maklet television. Recording is a kaletet. It's something that has made its impact and is now preserved in that place, right? But it's interesting that we use it very, very strongly for issues like this idea. In other words, a passing wave that has been now recorded where it is, right? Physically speaking. And that's exactly what's happening now. Where it's passing through Rishut HaRabim. Okay, but it's recorded, so to speak, in Rishut HaRabim. Its passage is recorded. Therefore, for all intents and purposes, it is now kalut within Rishut HaRabim, despite the fact that it's passing by. Okay, like the same as an electromagnetic wave. So we see that as a klita, even though it's not a halakha. Okay,
like
fascinating.
Its presence is noted.
Its presence is noted. Brilliant. Our president is active today. Okay, we will see the Gemara will soon be medayik that point, according to Rashi. So, according to Rabbi Akiva, you're chayav, according to Rachamim, you're potter. Clearly, Rabbi Akiva holds, Amrin kluta kamishun chadamia, the klita of something within a space is the equivalent of its being at rest in that space. For Rabbanan Savri, lo armin kluta kamishun chadamia, according to the Rabbanan, we don't say that passage through a space is the equivalent of being at rest in it. So therefore, I never did a ma'asev hotza'ah at all. Now, are you saying, Rabbah, that you're convinced that that's the meaning of the Mishnah? The machloket Rabbi Akiva and the Rabbanan is the machloket about whether kluta is kamishun chadamia? But the problem is that Rabbah himself raised the issue about whether that's the machloket in the Mishnah. If this is the machloket, then clearly the ball had to have passed within 10 tefachim of the ground. Isn't that so? Because if it passed within, above 10 tefachim of the ground, as we've already learned, above 10 tefachim is no space when it comes to Rishut HaRabim. So if I throw a ball, I mean, usually I throw a ball above 10 tefachim. If I throw the ball, it passes above 10 tefachim, now lands in the other Rishut. Basically what I did is I went from Rishut HaYachid to another Rishut HaYachid through a Makam Ptur. So how could I possibly be chayav according to Rabbi Akiva? The only way I could say kluta is if it was within 10 tefachim, and then it could register within the space of the Rishut HaRabim.
You rolled it on the ground.
Or if I rolled it. I see he's thinking in South African terms of, you know, what is that silly game they play? There's no ceiling.
He's trying to change the Makom Ptur based on hemisphere.
10 tefachim would be like...
10 tefachim would be the ceiling.
A normal ceiling height.
No. 10 tefachim is a meter.
But the height of the table.
No. Yes. They didn't play those games. So the question is, And that would limit the Mishnah, the Machlokas Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim, to being betoch asara. You'd have to be within 10 tefachim of the ground. V'homi boy lay Rabbi himself wasn't certain that that was the approach of the Mishnah, and now you're telling me that Rabbi wants to use this Mishnah to explain that we're going according to Rabbi Akiva in our Mishnah, even though he wasn't even sure that there exists such a sheet in Rabbi Akiva. What was the alternative explanation of that Mishnah? Ah, because Rabbi wanted to know when it came to that Mishnah itself. He asked it as follows. Lemata me'asara pligin? Is the machloket in that Mishnah between the Rabban and Rabbi Akiva dafka limited to throwing the ball within 10 tefachim? Uba hapligi, and then the machlokes would be that Rabbi Akiva holds kluta is the equivalent of anoch. And the Rabbonu would hold no. Lo amin kluta kibishu kutamika. But in that case, lamalami asar divrei akol patur. In that case, if it was above 10 tefachim, then for sure nobody could possibly say you'd be chayim because it's a no space. And that would be based on an assumption that Lekulayama lo yalfinan zorek mi moshit. Now, in order to understand those words, we have to have a momentary introduction. And that is, there's a whole different type of hutzah, which is learned from an entirely different event in the Midbar. And that is called moshit. Moshit means passing something into someone else's hand. And that idea comes from the fact that in order to take down the Mishkan, to transport the Mishkan, it was necessary to take a piece of wood, lift it up, these were the large krashim, lift up the carriage, put it on top of the trucks that they used for transporting the Mishkan, which were lined up. So they would take the Mishkan, put it to a truck, the people on that truck would move it across the people on the next truck, across the Midbar, and it would be passed back until they loaded up the back truck, and then so on and so forth, right? Now that means that there was a malacha that was done for the Mishkan that consisted of passing krashim over an empty space from one reshut hayachid, one truck, to another truck, another reshut hayachid. But that was done, particularly with hoshata.
Above 10.
Yes, that's a whole new idea. Now that hoshata, on the contrary, the other way it sinks upwards, in which case he wakes up. You know what? Maybe some flags with it. Nautical flags. Warnings or things like that.
Tough waters ahead.
It's a 50-guy control. Mayday, mayday.
Given the Gemara Brachos on dreams, you should really have like a coffee cup or some kind of, you know, but this thing sinking down, I think it's not the...
You think it's too suggestive?
Airplane.
So now, this would mean, if you want to explain that the Machlokas in the Mishnah is talking about Dafka with a Kluta Kmishun Chadanya, it's because you ignore the similarity of throwing a ball to passing a carriage. In other words, for sure this has nothing to do with the relationship of Zerika to the din of Moshit, Mirushut HaYachid, Mirushut HaYachid, with Mirushut HaRabim Be'emza. That's not the way we want to understand that Mishnah. But there's an alternative, Odilma, and the Rabbi continues, or I could learn that the Machlokas Rabbi Akiva and the Rabbanan has nothing to do with the concept of Kluta Kmishun Chadamya. Everybody may agree Kluta Kmishun Chadamya as far as I'm concerned, and maybe the Machloket here is because it's above 10 Tvachim, and therefore it has nothing to do with Kluta Kmishun Chadamya, because it's a no space. What's the point of being colored in a no space? So maybe it's talking about lamala me'asara pligi b'hapligi. Machloket being the Rabbi Akiva savar yalfinan zarek mimoshit. Rabbi Akiva says throwing a ball is no different than passing a carriage. And therefore there exists a malacha called throwing a ball across a reshut harabim.
from one Rishuta Yachid to another Rishuta Yachid. Pretend my Rishuta Yachid is one of the Agalot HaMidbar. The other Rishuta Yachid is one of the Agalot HaMidbar. And the area in between was the area between the Agalot. What's the problem? Are we all right? What's your problem? Articulate your problem. Don't give me faces.
Focus.
Focus. Ah, that's the problem. That's the problem. I can't help it. But there's no conceptual problem. There's only a problem with the conceptual.
What's the
previous
answer?
What's
the previous answer?
The previous answer was Kuleyama Loyofin and
Zorik Moshi. Okay, so how
is
that?
Here we're. What?
How is that?
The first approach was that they're arguing in Klutik Misha and Chadan. That's the solving the problem. The second approach is that they're not arguing Klutik Misha and Chadan. They're arguing as to whether throwing is the equivalent of passing. So, and that would be a machlokas lamala me'asara. Rabbi Akiva, by the way, there is a question is whether it means dafka lamala me'asara. In other words, is there no din of hoshata lamata me'asara? Tosfos discusses this in Amud Aleph, because we could have offered an alternative. Everybody else kluta is lavka mishum kadanya. And it's lamata me'asara. Why do we have to leave it for mala me'asara? And the machlok is whether yalfin and moshe leave in lamata me'asara. Right? I'm sure this strikes you immediately. Why do we do it this way? Okay. But anyway, let's ignore that question. For now, we'll get to this in Perek HaZorek. So maybe the machlokas is that they're arguing lamala me'asara. Rabbi Akiva holds we learn out Zorek mimoshit. The Rabbanan holds we don't learn out Zorek mimoshit. But lamata me'asara, everybody holds you would be chayav maybe. Why? My time up. I mean, include the Kamishun Chadanya. Okay, gentlemen, you're all falling asleep. Let me review this briefly just so we could see what happened. It's very simple. The Mishnah says a hand is not a Rishus Harabim and is not a Rishus Hayyav. What is going on there? Not a Rishus Harabim, not a Rishus Hayyav. However, a hand that's attached to a body that is in a particular Rishus seems to have the same din as where that body is. However, we ask the problem with that. Problem is, it's all very nice that it's in the Rishus, but it's not Munach in the Rishus. It has to be on a 4x4 area to be Munach. Rabbah had a simple solution. Since we find that Rabbi Akiva holds that if you throw a ball from Rishus HaRayoket to Rishus HaYoket, and it passes through Rishut HaRabim, that you would be Chayat, obviously, Rabbi Akiva holds, so you don't need a Makom Arba Al Arba. As a matter of fact, you don't even need to be at rest. The very fact that you pass through a Rishut HaRabim on the way to the other Rishut HaYachid is the equivalent of landing there. Fine. So according to him, when I put it down in the other guy's hand, it's landed. Despite the fact that it's not in a Makom Arba Al Arba. Right? Simple solution. Is that a simple solution or is it not?
Isn't that totally changed what Robin said? That it's
forget about changing anything. Is that a simple solution?
Okay. How did it land in 4x4 on the other side?
In the other side?
Yeah. I mean,
he landed on the ground. No, actually, he caught it in one of those big... Yeah. All right. Now, that is the case, by the way, later on. The net that you catch it in are those things they use in your country, one of those big... Ah, yes. Okay, gentlemen. That's all. That was the Gemara. Very simple. Okay. We had a problem with Rabba, which is an aside. The problem is, how did Rabba say that? Rabba didn't know that Rabbi Akiva holds that passing through is enough of a reason to be considered to be at rest. There's a completely different approach to understanding Rabbi Akiva. Maybe the reason Rabbi Akiva says you can't play ball across Rosh Hashanah is because he holds that playing ball across Rosh Hashanah is exactly the same as passing one of the Kreshim of the Mishkan from one wagon to another wagon across Rosh Hashanah. Which was it after with being at rest? You don't need to be at rest in that case. It's a different type of Otsah. which is learned out from a different pasuk. And therefore, how does Rabbah all of a sudden, when he himself raised the question about what Rabbi Akiva Shita is, all of a sudden he says, well, it's obvious if Rabbi Akiva holds your chayim for playing ball across from Shuta Rabbim, must be that he holds that you don't need to be at rest in Rishuta Rabbim. That's ridiculous. He himself offered an alternative to that explanation. So why over here is he suddenly ready to throw out that explanation that was a given? That's all. Very simple. Okay, this is a tangential question on Rabbah. Says the Gemara, okay, fine, so he changed his mind. So what's the big deal? No? Maybe originally he wasn't sure how to understand Rabbi Akiva. Maybe he has more data now. And he now knows the Machlok and Rabbi Akiva and the Rabbanan indeed. Is it because of Kluta Kvishunko? So says the Gemara, hello, Kashis, that's a problem. But the Diboy or the Rishitilay. Maybe after he was doubtful originally. As to the meaning of the Machlok, is Rabbi Akiva and the Rabbanan? After 35 years, he figured it out. And I understand why you're asking this. He realized the suburb of Rabbi Akiva, Klut the Kamishon Chadanya, maybe from 4,000 other places. Fine. Now we get to our president's question. Rabbi Akiva says you're Chayav. How come you're only Chayav once? Why aren't you Chayav twice? Because if you're playing ball across the Shetar Abim, and the reason that you're Chayev is because passing through a space registers you in that space, then you registered when you landed, and you registered when you took off. So you should be Chayev for both a Hotzah and for a Hakanasa. He only says once. Which leads us to suspect that maybe Rabbi Akiva holds that there are two different elements when it comes to Hotzah, and that we should not define Hanakha as being the equivalent of Akira. Maybe, indeed, Akira does have to be off of a place that is Arba al Arba. Because all he's saying over here is Dilma Hanakha hu delo boy. Maybe you don't need a Hanakha. In other words, you took something out of an at-rest state in a particular space. It passes through another space. Okay, it now registered in that other space. That's Hotzah. But you never uprooted it from that space because it was never at rest in that space. So maybe Akira is defined by removing something from being at rest, whereas Hanakha is just to register. Why would I say such a thing? What do you mean? As our president shows, there's only one chiyuv in playing ball across Rosh Hashanah. Obviously, somebody's making this distinction. Because otherwise, it should say, you're chiyuv twice. Okay, that's Rashi's dear. Exactly as we were medayik here. Okay, Tosfos has an alternative, but we'll leave it for now because you guys are sleepy enough. So, therefore, we need another explanation. Because in our Mishnah, we see that you need neither Akira nor Hanocha from a place Arba al Arba, correct? Because we see that you could put it down in the hand of the Balabai and you'd be Chayev. Now, it's all very nice, kind of really esteem. But in our Mishnah, also says if you take it out of the hand of the Balabai, if you're ready to say that it's not at rest unless it's in a Mokam Arba al Arba, oh my goodness. So why are you Chayev and taking it out of the hand of the Balabai? You didn't take it from a position which was at rest. Properly at rest. Properly at rest. Properly at rest.
Properly at rest.
Properly at rest.
Properly at rest.
For the same reason as you don't have the second drop, the second of the field.
What?
It's not properly at rest.
Not properly at rest. Yes? I mean, Lechora, Richie could sleep on the top of a flagpole also. In which case, it's clear that you don't need an off on Gabi Mokham.
A flagpole is probably less than off the bottom.
That's right.
As long as he's properly addressed.
Therefore, we need another explanation. Elam Rav Yosef Hamani Rebihi. There is, in fact, a shita that holds that you don't need Arba al Arba, and that's Rebbe. Rebbe talks about throwing something onto a flagpole. Tanya, Zarak v'nach ha-gabeziz koshuhu, Rebbe mechayev v'chachamim potrim. That if you throw something and it lands on any type of the smallest thing that sticks out, aziz simply means anything that's jutting out. So on a small thing jutting out, despite the fact that it's only a koshu, it's an arba larba, it's at rest. Now wait a minute, says the Gemara. As well you know, later on Abaya is going to explain that case for other reasons, which needs to be done over there, that it's talking about Hacha b'ilan, homei b'rshut hayachid, v'nofo notel b'rshut rabin, which incidentally is irrelevant to our sugya. Where the tree is unimportant for us. What is important is that this tree has a trunk which is arbal arba. So because it has a trunk which is arbal arba, any branch is considered to be securely at rest because of the trunk. And therefore, it's considered to be arbal arba. So since it's talking about Ilan Ha'omed Rishut Ha'akid V'nofen Ha'otel Rishut Ha'abim V'zorak V'nach Ha'nofu, it landed on a branch, Rebbe holds in terms of the security of being at rest, Shedin Nofo Batar Ikaro, view the branch as being now Arba Al Arba because the trunk is Rabban Asabi Lo Arminin Shedin Nofo Batar Ikaro. Don't look at the trunk since the trunk is in a different Rishut. Nothing to do with our sugya. Fine. So which Rebbe did you mean? That Rebbe doesn't prove that you don't need Arba Al Arba. Elaha Rebbe. It's the following case of Rebbe, the Tanya. Zarak Mirshut Rabim Lirshut Rabim. Here we're talking about a case in which two kids are playing ball, all right. However, to their parents' chagrin, instead of playing ball from 1 yard to another yard across the Rishut Rabim, they are playing from one street to another street across the house. Yikes. Fortunately, there's no glass in the windows. Or there's no glass anymore in the windows. So now the question is, in there, Rebbe says, Beferosh, that Zarak, Rishut HaYachid, Rishut HaRabim, Rishut HaRabim, Rishut HaYachid Be'emtza, Rebbe is Mechayev, Bechachamim Potrim, and indeed, Rebbe Yehuda Bar Shmuel says, by the way, when it says Rebbe was Mechayev twice. Once for Haknasa, when the ball enters into the Rishut HaYachid, on its way out of the Rishut HaYachid, into the other Rishut HaRabim, and once for leaving, when it leaves the Rishut HaYachid, into the Rishut HaRabim on the other side of the house. So there we have someone who clearly holds you need neither Akira nor Hanacha on a Mokum Arba Al Arba. So that would be the solution. Our Mishnah is following Rebbe's Shita. It's Achat Mishum Otza'ah V'Achat Mishum Achnasa, which proves, Alma, Lo Be'inan Lo Akira V'Lo Hanacha Al Gabi Mokum Arba Al Arba, which means you don't need 4x4 tefachim, because otherwise how could you possibly be mechayev twice? Once for an hanacha in a Rishut HaYachid, which you're just passing through, and once for an akira out of a Rishut HaYachid, from which you were just passing through and never were really at rest. So now we have our Mandi Omar. Says the Gemara, no, we don't have our Mandi Omar, because the case, gentlemen, is indeed a case where the ball passes right through the living room. You'll say, what's the nafka mean if it passes through the living room, or if it passes through a yard that is covered with mechitzas, surrounded by mechitzas? I'll tell you very simply. If it passes through the living room, there is a roof on the living room. And that defines a reshut in a new way. Normally, a reshut is not defined by an upper area. But if you do define it by an upper area, then the entire Rishut is viewed as having an added set of coordinates, and therefore it's completely sealed in. Normally, your x-axis and your y-axis are, one of them is going to be unlimited, right? in a normal Rishut HaYachid, because it will extend up Ad HaShamayim. In this case, you have a limit because you're not able to go above the roof. It's still being the same Rishut. The moment you're on the roof, you're in a different Rishut. Once that's true, the Rishut is considered to be a solid object. That type of space is solid. And in that type of space, you don't need a hanacha. But you can't, certainly can't extrapolate from there to the case in our Mishnah. I mean, why would I say that you don't require akira hanacha? Of course you require akira hanacha under normal conditions. And therefore, lo mechayev rebi ala rishut hayachid mikura. It's only because there's a roof on it. Since there's a roof on it, I mean, beta kamanda malya damya. It's as if it's all one solid thing. The fact that it happens to be passing through is no different than the way it got through the window. Avo she'eno mikura lo. If it were not mikura, then none of this would work.
See that the roof extends, as it were, the 10 tefachim.
There's no 10 tefachim in the Rishut HaYachid, ever. Now, maybe you'll say, okay, so over here it's also roofed. The guy stuck his hand, we'll see why. A guy stuck his hand into the Rishut, so the Balabayat takes it. I mean, he's a Balabayat, there's a beautiful roof up there. I mean, so it's in his living room. So, according to Rebbe, that's the answer. Or he took it out of a hand that's in a beautiful living room. But the problem is, it was in the inverse as well. The Balabayat deposits something in the hand of the Ani. The Ani is not standing in a beautiful living room. So you'll say, okay, fine, he's not standing in a beautiful living room. He's standing in a tent city. They covered over like they have right outside here in Menachem Zion. They have that little thing to shade you from the sun. Still Rishut HaRabim, isn't it? And the answer is no. It's not. Bechitema, maybe you'll try to tell me, Achanami Mikorah, it's talking about over here, where there is an upper limit on the Rishut. No, sir. A Rishut HaYachid can be Mikura. Therefore, yes, the Balabayat is in his beautiful living room. But a Rishut HaRabi, by definition, can never be Mikura. By the definition of what a Rishut HaRabi is, it cannot be Mikura. And the moment that it's Mikura, it's no longer Rishut HaRabi. Therefore, the Mishnah is discussing a case of an Ani as a representative of Rishut HaRabim, he's obviously not standing in Rishut HaRabim Mikorah. The Omer Rav Shmuel Bar Yoram Rav Avon Rav Unam Rav and Ba'avir Chepetz Arba Amot Rishut HaRabim Mikorah Patur Lefisha Eino Domela Dizlei Midbar. Being as the Midbar is the source of our definition of Rishuyot, the Dizlei Midbar, walking through the Midbar, did not find the Midbar Mikorah. Therefore, Rishut HaRabim cannot be Mikura and still be Rishut HaRabim. Our Mishnah, that's correct, the Cardo is Rishut HaYachid. And therefore, there is no way...
The Astrodome and the covered stadium...
We'll see that there are limits in terms of carmelite. Carmelite to sizes. That's a Takana Durabonan issue. But it cannot be a Rishut HaRabim, a true Rishut HaRabim. Even the Astrodome. Not this one, anyway. All right, so we now have our dechia of the next approach. You can't use Rebbe as the sort. We can't use Rebbe Akiva as the basis of our mission, because our mission says both Akira and Anocha are okay in a hand. You can't use Rebbe as the source of our mission, because Rebbe was only referring to an enclosed space that has a roof. And since the mission refers to a Rishut HaRabim, which cannot be an enclosed space with a roof by definition, it can't be Rebbe's Shita. So we still don't have an answer to our problem. Our problem is that a hand is not four tvachim by four tvachim. It's important to say arba'a al arba'a, because if you say arba al arba, it means etzba'ot. Lashon now nekeva, and we do have many shirim that are defined by etzba'ot. So you better, in this particular case of Yitziot HaShabbat, don't let your fingers do the walking. It's dafka tvachim, okay? Arba'ah.
And if you talk to an Israeli about arba'ah, you're talking about his SUV.
Oh, that's right. But then it's Rav. Yes, Motzei Shabbos. Yes, Kalman is here. Yes, could you please take care of it for me? Quickly. Gemara Brachos.
Why not on Shabbos again?
Here. Give them, please, my Gemara Brachos.
Why can't the Anani HaKavod be a Korah?
It's worse than that. The Gemara says that it turned into a Korah. It was Pitzurat Korah when they walked. So he says, let it be the Korah.
What?
The Anani HaKavod was turned into a Korah.
Yeah, but that's the idea.
Huh? No, it's a cloud is not a sealant of a rishos. Wait!
Motzei Shabbos.
I'm sorry, but your minion is still here. To allow people to escape is not a bad thing. So I have to get back to the Rov of Motzei Shabbat. So could we have it at 9:30 again? Would that be okay? Yeah, 9:30. Very good. All right.